Lecture 3, Monarchy and Society in France.
In our last lecture, we talked about the kinds of political theories common in Europe during the 16th century, and we'd now like to turn to the more concrete case of France during the wars of religion between the early 1560s and the late 1590s. Since, however, this is a course about the interaction between ideology, monarchy, and society, I think we need to begin with a look at French society itself on the eve of the wars of religion. And here, we have to begin with a basic social fact, which is that during the 16th century, something like 80, in some regions even 90% of the French population were peasants. The peasantry is simultaneously the most numerous and also the least enfranchised segment of society. That is to say, peasants had no direct voice in the kinds of assemblies, usually called estates, which represented the concerns of subjects to the monarchy. This doesn't mean that peasants had no way of communicating their grievances or desires to the higher-ups. They could always petition, either as individuals or as corporate bodies. But since they had no institutional representation, their concerns and grievances tended to get rather less attention from the monarchy than the church, the nobility, or the bourgeoisie. And this is a large part of the reason why peasants had a tendency to riot when they were unhappy. Now, peasants were not only the most numerous segment of the kingdom, they were also the economic center of gravity for the kingdom. It's not simply the case that the peasants fed everybody else in society, but the sheer value of agricultural production dwarfed all other forms of activity, whether trade, commerce, or industry in early modern France. Therefore, the peasant masses, or more specifically the taxation of the peasant masses, was the financial foundation of the French crown, and Louis XIII's minister Richelieu was once alleged to have said that peasantry was, for that reason, the donkeys of the state, an unflattering but somewhat realistic characterization. Peasant life itself is characterized by local corporate identities. The center of life was usually the village, whose population ranged anywhere between 300 to 500. Most villages had their own church and their own parish priest. The economy of the village itself was grounded in an agriculture, a kind of collective agriculture organized by village councils. Now, to say that it was collectively organized does not mean that the village was a kind of egalitarian utopia. There were sharp divides between rich and poor in peasant villages, and this, needless to say, led to envies and all kinds of grievances inside the village. But the essential point is that whenever any kind of outsider came to call, whether soldiers, the ministers of the king, a minister of a new religion, they were always met with a kind of instinctive suspicion. Now, when talking about the peasantry, we also have to be aware of a basic technological fact, which is that agricultural productivity was miserably low by contemporary standards. And the obvious consequence of this is that peasant life was extremely harsh. The work itself was backbreaking, and in fact it was literally backbreaking, because the grain at that time was never cut with a scythe, which was fast and efficient, but tended to waste the straw. It tended to be cut with a sickle, which meant that people were bent over while they were actually doing the most important work of the harvest. Safety margins in this kind of agriculture were extremely slim. There was extreme danger of bad weather, of crop failure, which could bring extreme mortality to the villages. Indeed, the kinds of reconstructions that have been done on the basis of French church registers and on the basis of archaeological investigations in the American Northern Plains suggest to us that life expectancy in 18th century France for a peasant child is no better at all than life expectancy in the contemporary Dakotas for a Sioux child. So much for civilization. Now, an essential backdrop to 16th century peasant life was a very long-term increase in rural population. Between about the years 1460 and about the years 1560, the population of France expanded dramatically and may even have doubled. The consequence of this was twofold. On the one hand, peasant landholdings, their farms, tended to get cut up into ever smaller fragments since they were divided among ever more heirs. And in addition, there was a major inflation in food prices. Now, we need to keep in mind that the price inflation of the 16th century, which historians often like to call the price revolution, was rather modest by contemporary standards. It took about 60 years, between about 1500 and about 1560, for prices to double. But to contemporaries, that kind of a phenomenon was extremely unsettling when people lived in a world of notional or conventional prices. And indeed, it's interesting to note that price inflation in 16th century France led to one of the first recorded economic debates in early modern European history between Jean Baudin and the Sieur de Maletroit in 1566. They were arguing about what it was that actually caused the increase in prices, whether it was debasement of the currency, as de Maletroit thought, or whether it was an increase in population, as Baudin argued. And Baudin, at least most historians would agree, had the upper hand in the argument.